So we are continuing discussion on the third chapter. It deals with different mental flows that we have discussed. So the Samyama is a type of mental exercise which is a combination of the last three elements of Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. Dharana means the ability to focus of mind with deep concentration on one object or one idea or one idea. And Dhyana is the ability to continue the concentration during the long time. And Samadhi is the highest peak of this exercise of concentration, when we get completely absorbed in the essence of what we meditate upon, what we concentrate upon. Together, it's called something, a kind of internal meditation exercise. In a general way, we can say it is a combination of gradual development and ascending of augmented thoughts, that is from concentration, meditation and intention. So when a yogi develops his thoughts of higher concentration, he is able to get an intuitive understanding of whatever he is trying to understand. His mind becomes sharp enough to penetrate through the outer layers, and he gets an inner understanding of whatever he is doing, whatever he lets his mind engage in. So this is called samyama. Means the last three stages of yoga coming together. We already discussed this sutras will deal with different mental powers that automatically we develop as a result of this concept. Now, as I mentioned earlier, it is not chance or accident. It is the scientific development of rational development of mental powers. So there is nothing miraculous in it. When we develop our physical powers through exercise, body develops certain skills which anyone who doesn't do that exercise, anyone who doesn't go through that exercise will not be able to do. Strength, endurance, and so on. This happens very well. And one important point that Parajaya insists on is very important and very significant. Very relevant here. As I mentioned earlier in the last session, the first two sets of disciplines, which include 10 elements, yama and niyama. Yama is ahimsa, satya, asteya, manasuri, aparigraha. Means non-violence, non-stealing, chastity, and not having any desire for things that belong to others. And abhigraha, without having no desire for accepting anything from anybody, because that person becomes completely contented. That is mentioned in the second set of five disciplines, is called niyama. That is, savati sandosha tapa swadhyaya isvapanita, internal and external purity. Then fortitude, austerity, reading scriptures, repeating mantras, and in contentment, the feeling of inner condition, inner perfection, so that we have no desire for anything. And then you should come to have a sense of complete surrender to God. So this is already the explanation in the intention. This is why we do it in the first. But this Yamas and Niyamas have got a very important link connection with this Vibhuti part. This commentator is like Yasa, that is in the beginning. Any person, any meditation, if you have any of these powers or skills that we already explained in the last two sessions, without going through these inner disciplines, will be facing this power. So, the later commentators, especially in modern times, one of them is Swami Sivananda, says, who was the founder of the Vaishnava society, and who taking ideas from Vyasa's commentary and Shankaracharya's saying, another textbook reminded again and again in his teachings related in Finland. He's one of the persons responsible for popularizing what we now understand is Buddhism. But you see, isn't the ideas are taken from Shankara Bhakti Vivarana, where he says, Shankaracharya says, that any person who practices this higher disciplines of meditation and develops his inner powers without a strong foundation on ahimsa may become very wild. Because their incurrent tendencies, accumulated vasanas and samskaras, coming from previous world, a tendency of violence, may be sharpened, may be hyperactivated if a spiritual seeker practices paramedicina for higher consciousness. So whatever tendency we have gets often with help of activity. Two important words that I already explained in the Sanskrit. Santosha is one of the niyamas. Asteya and abhigraha are niyamas. It's an universal moral principle, as we already explained. Suppose we practice a lot of concentration and develops higher mental skills, the ability to focus on mind or higher ideas, without getting fully established in asteya and abhigraha. It means complete freedom from desire, from the tendency to possess things that belong to others, either by stealing or by accepting gifts, and without having contended with what we have. Then this person, as a result, the practice of these practice and then some yama, then what happened is helps us to move forward with this, which is the Padanjali system, and when we discuss Samadhi.
Nirvikalpa Samadhi, Samprajnata Samadhi, Asamprajnata, which we'll discuss. So that will take us to higher.
On the other hand, if we don't get fully established in Samadhi, then we will practice this higher concentration. The our mind will be put back good and can be possible. So all these abilities and skills, like samskara, sakshat, karana, upajara, jnana, as you mentioned already. See, you are able to get an idea of your previous life, upajara, jnana, then what
Experiences that caused the samskaras which constitute your personality in this life. So you look towards yourself, analyze the nature of your samskaras, characteristics, tendencies and impressions. And then on the basis of these samskaras, you'll get an idea of what kind of life and experiences we might have gone through in previous life. So samskara sakshatkarana means samyama. Samskara sakshatkarana samyama. That word in Panchami Vibhakti is to be added, these are words to be added when we read this, which you get in the commentary. But we need not worry about that right now. So what happens, as I mentioned earlier, whole personality should be viewed according to what the yoga philosophers called the karma vritti chakram. Chakra means a wheel, a cycle. Karma means action. Vritti means impressions, tendencies and samskaras generated, created by what we do. When we do something consciously or speak, any kind of action, verbal, physical or intellectual or mental action, in the form of thought, word or deed, if you do consciously, its after effect doesn't die away when the action is over. It leaves, it registers a strong tendency or impression in the mental world called chitta. So that residual effect is called vritti in the system of Padanjali. So, if we do something and if the result is not pleasant, then we have a tendency to avoid that action because the residual element, which is called vritti, is unpleasant, which prompts us away from repeating that unpleasant action because it produces an unpleasant result, which becomes an unpleasant vritti. And that also becomes a samskara, which also functions in a negative way. So, even if it is necessary, we may not do that. If it is a pleasant result and a pleasant vritti in tendency, then we may have a tendency to do it again. Now, suppose if we can concentrate on the external characteristics which manifests in the form of samskaras, which give an idea of the actions that the person have done in the past, with this samyama, then we get a clear understanding of his previous actions, which constituted his previous life. Because every tendency is a result of accumulated samskaras, and every samskara is caused by an action. So, if there is a strong tendency in a person, which you cannot really explain in terms of his experiences in this life, it comes from another source. So, when we do samyama, what happens? We get the result of concentration plus meditation plus intuition. Intuitive knowledge is beyond what we get through concentration and meditation and rational analysis, but intuitive knowledge doesn't contradict reason but goes beyond reason. So intuitive knowledge or intuition which a yogi develops cannot be rationally or scientifically explained with the help of the available tools of modern psychology. But that intuition goes beyond reason and beyond psychological analysis, but it never contradicts reason. So that's why we already discussed this. So I'm just trying to prepare you for two or three very important sutras which are very crucial in this Vibhutipada. So the next one we discuss, 19th, Pratyasya Parachitta Jnana. So there also in the sutra which we read, you find there is one particular word that is over in Panchami Vibhakti, in fifth case, which Patanjali doesn't use because it's a sutra. So sutra is supposed to be an aphorism, it's a pithy statement. So Pratyasya Sakshankaranat Parachitta Jnana, which means by realizing, by accomplishing samyama on the signs in another person's mind, body, character, etc., you can get an idea of how his mind works. Parachitta Jnana means you get an idea of how the other person's mind works. This also we discussed. Next one is, this is today's subject. Nacha tat salambanam tasya abhishayi bhutatvad. This is the 20th sutra. So nacha tat salambanam. Here tat here means, if those who know, want to study the sutra, means tat means parachittam, which again should be added. So you have to remember, in the printed versions, Patanjali sutras are mentioned. But there may be one or two words that should be added to this sutra when to get full meaning. So these words are called Vakyashesha, means to be added or to be understood as part of the sutra. We get only from later commentators. So the idea is this. When you do samyama, you will find that the idea of the condense of the mind. So a yogi would not know the condense of the mind by making samyama on the body. So what happens? The samyama on the body will reveal some of his characteristics, but the second samyama on what the body reveals about the person's mind, because body and his actions may also reveal how the person's mind works. So yogi is able to penetrate through the outer layer of external signs of a body, of a human being, and will be able to get a complete understanding of the way that other person's mind works through this twofold samyama on the body and what the body reveals about that person's thoughts or functions of the mind. The next sutra is Kaya Rupa Samyamat Tagrahish Shakti Stambhi Chakshu Prakasha Asam Yogi Antardhanam. So Kaya Rupa Samyamat Tagrahish Shakti Stambhi Chakshu Prakasha Asam Yogi Antardhanam, which means when a yogi practices samyama on the external form of anything, then what happens? He is able to distinguish rupa, the external form, and also its perceptibility. As I mentioned, through constant concentration, intuitive concentration. The yogi is able to distinguish a form, that is the external form of form of the body and the body itself. That means the perceptibility of an object and the object itself are normally blended together for any ordinary person. A yogi is able to analyze an object with his intuitive power as a combination of Pancha Mahabhudas. So that is called Kaya Rupa. The form of a body, the form of any body means any entity, any visible, visual object, is the result of five elements. Now, a yogi is able to distinguish what a normal person will not be able to do. That means the perceptibility or form of an object and the object itself, which are together, blended together for any ordinary person. I know, so if you have got any doubt, you can ask. If you have got anything, any doubt about this, you can refer to the 17th sutra, where Patanjali says, Shabdartha Pratyayanam Idaredra Adhyasa Sankaraha Tat Pravibhaga Samyamat Sarva Bhuta Taru Jnanam, where Patanjali says that normally for any ordinary person who has not practiced yogic meditation, Shabda Arthan Pratyaya, word, its meaning, and our knowledge or awareness of that object. Let us say a horse, the word, its meaning is it's an animal. And then the third element is our awareness of the fact there is a horse in front of us. These three appear together, sankara, blended together for any ordinary individual. But a yogi is able to analyze threadbare, each separate from the other. So shabda, the word, and what it implies, artha, and pratyaya, the knowledge about it. These are together, sankara, for any ordinary person. But a yogi looking at the whole thing is able to, analyze them as separate entities, which enables him to concentrate on one object, one entity itself. So here in the sutra, in this 19th sutra, what Patanjali says is, a yogi with his samyama meditation is able to distinguish form and the body, which is not possible for any ordinary being, like the Shabdartha Pratyayana, because he has already trained in separating Shabda, Artha, and Pratyaya, the word and what it implies, and also our knowledge about it. I can explain this with the help of an example which is historically recorded. You must have heard that, when Swami Vivekananda was traveling in England, somewhere in Europe, he was reading a volume of Encyclopedia Britannica. And he was turning pages one after another very fast. So somebody asked him, Swamiji, are you reading all this? So Swamiji said, yes, but couldn't believe, because he was turning the pages so fast that normal person may not be able to do. Then Swamiji challenged, you can test me. And that person took the book and asked questions on those pages which Swamiji turned one after another rapidly. And Swamiji could answer every question that the person asked. Of course, there are two elements, powers involved here. First of all, his extreme concentration. When he read something, his mind was fully engaged in what he was reading. Normally, when we read a book, along with reading, we also may be hearing the sound of a car moving in the street. We may be concentrating on what we read, but because our concentration is not 100%, our ears will be hearing the sound coming from the street. And perhaps we may also be thinking about what we bought from Trader Joe's the previous day. And if there is incense stick burning in the shrine, we may also be enjoying the smell of it. So, all the five senses of perception are not focused on what we are reading. Eyes are focused here, but when eyes may be focused on the word what that we are reading, but eyes also may be seeing at the mental level some visual object that we may have seen the previous day. So the sense of sight, sense of touch, and we may be pressing our fingers on the table on which the book is kept. The sense of touch is doing something. The sense of vision also may be mentally seeing from memory what we saw some time past. And we may also be hearing the sound. Sense of hearing also may be drawn, may drag the mind towards the street from where the sound is coming. And there's a sense of smell also, maybe enjoying the perfume, maybe the smell of incense stick. At the same time, we are reading. So what happens? What we read, we don't remember. Only a fraction of the mind is allowed to focus on what we read. But when a yogi does it, what happens is, on the one hand, a yogi is able to, through pratyahara, a yogi is able to withdraw his five senses from external objects and fully focus on what he is reading, with the result that his mind is not being dragged to various external objects by the senses of perception. Eyes are not dragging the mind towards a visual object. The sense of hearing is not dragging the mind towards a car that is making a noise in the street. And the sense of smell is not dragging the mind towards a perfume that is coming from the shrine. Like that, all the five senses are cooperating with the mind by withdrawing completely from external things. So yogi is able to fully focus his mind on what he is doing. Now what happened? This kind of focused reading will enable you to register what you read strongly the mind, so you won't forget that. That is one thing. The second power is that the yogi develops is, he is able to look upon the whole knowledge as one entity. So when his mind, when his eyes and mind move rapidly through pages, they're able to grasp these things with so much of focus and concentration as a total world of knowledge. It's called Shabda, Artha, Jnana, Prapancha. The whole world of knowledge is manifesting for the yogi as one entity. So he's able to understand pursue what he is reading, and also he is able to remember, because what he reads registers a strong memory, because memory is always in direct proportion to the concentration with which we do things. If the mind is scattered, we don't remember. If you're walking in the street, we may see many objects in the street, we don't remember. But if there is something that registers strongly the mind, if you are chased by a dog, let us say, it doesn't happen, God forbid. But if it happens, And as a result, if you had to go to Kaiser, then you won't remember that incident. Because that event registers a strong memory. So what we normally casually observe, we don't remember. Because our mind is not focused on that. What really happens to us in a very intense way, mind fully remembers because of the strong registration of memory. So this is an important point to remember. And then, of course, I am heading towards 23rd sutra. So those who have the text with you, you find that the 21st sutra is Kaya Rupa Samyamat Tadgrahi Shakti Stambhe Chakshu Pragasa Asam Prayogi Antardhanam. Actually, when a yogi is able to separate form and body, then through his sankalpa, he can make himself invisible to the onlooker. How this happens, we cannot scientifically explain. But according to Patanjali, what he says is, when a yogi is able to differentiate or distinguish an object and its perceptibility, its visibility, which normally a person cannot do, but a yogi is able to distinguish, separate an object and its visibility or perceivability. So he focuses on visibility, and through his sankalpa, strong willpower, he can will, how he means, through his sankalpa, he can make himself invisible to a person. That's what the sutra says here. Now remember, if a person is not able, he is not fully established in yama, niyama, and develops these powers, you can imagine the danger and risk. So, okay. Now, the 22nd sutra that you find in our edition, Raja Yoga edition, is Etena Shabdantadhanam Uktam. That sutra comes as a part of Vyasa's commentary, the concluding sentence of his commentary on 21st sutra. That is, Etena Shabdadi Antardhanam Uktam. Through this, the disappearance or concealment of words which are being spoken and such other things are explained. So Vyasa concludes his commentary to his 21st sutra by what is presented in some books as the 22nd sutra. So it's not very important. Now we are coming to one of the most important sutras in this particular Prakarana context, that is 23rd sutra. Sopakramam nirvakramam cha karma tat samyamat aparanta jnanam va arishtebhyaha. Its prose order will be something like this. Sopakramam nirvakramam cha tat samyamat va arishtebhyaha aparanta jnanam. So, it requires a lot of explanation. First of all, the sutra says that karmas can be of two kinds. One karma is sopakramam, the other is nirupakramam. So, well, what is karma? First of all, we should understand what is karma in this context. So, karmas, what we mean by karma in the context of our present day life is the results of what the results of our previous life, which are yet to be fructified, worked out. This is what is meant by karma. So, first of all, the word karma itself needs an introduction. The word karma itself comes from the Sanskrit word kru, which means doing something. But the word karma doesn't necessarily mean action alone at the physical level. A word that we speak, a thought that we think, a flash of ideas in the mind, and also deliberate planned actions. All these constitute what is called karma. So, a thought also is a karma. Now, how to define a karma? karma is nothing but what leaves a residual element after it is over. So whatever we do, not necessarily physical actions, but whatever we speak or whatever ideas we think, all these have one visible, tangible, immediate result. And also an invisible result that we may experience at a later period. So these are two aspects of a karma. So remember, karma is not just physical action alone. Words, thoughts, deeds, everything is karma. So this karma belongs to two categories according to the sutra. One is sopakramam, which means karmas which are about to be worked out soon, immediately in our life. Nirupakrama means karmas which may be worked out gradually in the long run. So the commentators will use certain technical terms. Shigra vipakam is sopakrama, means certain actions that we do that we are sure will be worked out. The results of certain actions that may work out immediately very soon. And then the second category of karma and its results. Chiravibhaga means karmas it to be worked out gradually in the long run. Maybe in this life, next life. Now, what a yogi achieves this by analyzing, by concentrating on certain external signs, portents, which in the sutra is called arishta. The yogi is able to know the exact time of separation from their physical bodies. That is an important thing, which means he will know when he is going to die, to be very frank. Or he may know when this world is going to an end. So both are implied in this sutra. We will deal with only one aspect in today's session. Both cannot be dealt with. That's why sopakramam nirupakramam cha karma tas samyamat aparanta jnanam va arishtebhya. So by doing samyama on the karmas that are going to be worked out soon in our life, in this life itself, and also those karmas which are not going to be worked out immediately but in the long run gradually, it's called chiravibhaga karma. By concentration, by doing samyama on this karma aspect, the yogi will know when the karmas responsible for this embodiment, for this life, are going to be over, going to end. That's a time, that's a moment when the yogi leaves this body. Because this body, this embodiment, and this world of experiences, relations, money, wealth, positions, all that we have right now, are the manifestations of certain karmas which are now being worked out. And yogi will know how much more time is required for working out those karmas which are responsible for this physical body. So by doing samyama on that aspect through concentration, meditation and intuition, he develops an intuitive power to precisely determine the time when he is going to be separated from this body. Now, separation from this body or death is nothing unpleasant or scary in yoga, as we already know, I explained earlier. Yoga philosophy takes for granted, first of all, continued existence. It means the cycle of life, death and rebirth, and continuing the cycle depending upon working out the karmas. This is responsible for the present life. And also the immortality of the soul. So the karma result equation and the doctrine of cyclic existence. Every karma that we do, that we have done, that we are going to do, have something to something to say about what kind of life we are going to lead. And also the continuation of life after death. So these two aspects should be kept in mind. So a yogi is able to do samyama, intuitive meditation, intuitive concentration on certain aspects of karmas which are going to be worked out. And based on this visible signs of portents, he is able to determine the time when he is going to leave this body. Here Arista, a word is used, which means scriptures talk about certain portents, omens and signs. Based on this, the yogi gets an intuitive understanding of when he is going to die. This particular sutra and the commentary is often discussed along with another section from another book, that is Bhagavad Gita. So frequently, many of the commentators and yoga philosophers, except Buddhist philosophers, you know, who they don't refer to Vedantic texts, but great commentators like Vyasa and the super commentary Vyasa Bhashya, Vivarana by Shankaracharya, Vajaspati, and many other commentators try to explain this sutra in the light of six verses from Bhagavad Gita, that is 8th chapter, 5th to 10th verse, which explains the inner meaning of this sutra. So I shall try to explain this as briefly as possible, because we can't discuss all these mantras from Gita, but I shall explain. First, the fifth verse is quoted by commentators on Yoga Sutra. Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram ya prayadi madbhavam yadi nastitra samyama. This is one, and then the next one is yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tejatyante kalevaram tam tame vaiti kaudeya sada tad bhava bhavitah tasma sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yuddhija mayyarpita manobuddhi mamai vesatya samsaya Abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa nanyagamina purusham paramam divyam yadim arthana chintayan. So here there is a very graphic description of how a yogi develops these powers and makes use of these powers in his life. The fifth mantra is this. Antakale cha mameva smaran uktva kalevaram ya prayadi madbhavam yadi nastyatra samshaya. So Lord Krishna tells, a yogi at the end of, towards the end of his life, thinks of God alone, thinks of me alone, and leaves the body, and when he leaves the body, thinking of me, thinking of God, he reaches God himself. Antakale cha maranakale mameva parameswaram vishnum maran uktva parityajya kalevaram shariram yap prayadi gacchadi sat madbhavam vaishnavam tattvam yadi nasti na vidyade atra asmin arthe samsiyo yadi va na va iti. This is Shankaracharya's comment. It's very interesting. What it means is this. When a yogi analyzes his own life, the experiences that he goes through, he gets an idea of his own previous life and also the actions or karmas which form the background of his destiny in this life. So how much time will be required for him in this life to work out those karmas which are responsible for the present embodiment? So the whole world of karma should be understood properly. The whole world of karma and its result can be analyzed by classifying them into three categories. One set of karmas which are directly responsible for the present life. If we have everything going on fine for us in this life, it means we may have done certain meritorious deeds in the past. There are people for whom everything happens automatically, gradually, as if it is like a great spiritual seekers, great spiritual giants who are disproduced. If their life almost looks like a drama, as if God has himself prepared a stage for them to play the role of an actor. A particular stage is ready for you to take your role. You find like that. So by doing samyama on the present embodied life, the yogi understands the set of karmas necessary for the present life. It's called prarabdha karma. Prakashena arabdham karma, prarabdha karma means the karmas which have already started working out. And as a result of working out of those karmas, we are born in a particular family, in a particular culture. We are born with certain tendencies and some characteristics. And all these are the results of working out of certain karmas that come from previous life. That is called prarabdha karma. It's like an arrow that has left the bow about to reach the target. So remember, an arrow need not hit the target. An arrow only has to exhaust its velocity. It need not hit the target. So that's why, you know, last time when we discussed, God's grace acts like a strong wind which takes the arrow in another direction. So if you pray, if you meditate, if you do good deeds, noble deeds, helping others, philanthropical activities, all these create a counter karma and its phalas, which may help us to reduce the intensity of negative experiences, unpleasant experiences. So sufferings can be reduced. The intensity can be drastically reduced by doing good deeds through prayer, either at the subjective level, through spiritual practices, prayer, meditation, or at the objective level by helping others. So, prarabdha karma is like the arrow which has to exhaust its velocity and momentum. It is already left the bow, so the archer has no control over it, but somebody has control over it. So we call it the reconciliation or blending of God's grace, which acts as a strong wind which deflects the arrow, turns the arrow in another direction. So we can change our own destiny through prayer, which we discussed in another, when we were discussing another sutta. The second set of karmas are sanchita karmas. It's like a bag which has not yet opened. So prarabdha karmas are already on the table. You have to work out this life, embodied. We cannot get back. But sanchita karmas are karmas which have not yet started working out. Sanchita means accumulated. They will start working out only maybe next life, in combination with the karmas of this life. Agami karmas are karmas yet to be worked out. So that is why one of the commentators on Yoga Sutras, which of the clue is taken from Shankaracharya's comment, he says, if you do something noble, something good, something fine, either helping somebody or through your own meditation, you are bringing about a change in your own destiny. So if you help somebody, serve somebody, a good person, some through what you call punya karmas, meritorious deeds. His good actions will be transferred to your account. But if you do harm to some good person, then his bad karmas will be turned to your account. That's what he said. That means if you help a good person, a noble person, then his accumulated punyas, good karmas, will be turned to your account. And if you do harm to him, then whatever little stock of bad karmas he may have, that be turned over to your account. So that's why. So one of the commentators say, the sopakramam karma. Sopakramam means the karmas which are going to be worked out soon. If a person does something very bad, very evil, it becomes sopakramam karma. Means it's unpleasant consequences you have to go through immediately. That's an idea. So anyway, we will continue this discussion in the light of the Gita verses, which Gita throws additional light to some of the implications of this particular sutra. In the next session, we will continue discussion. Now we will have discussion for some time, maybe 5-10 minutes. So the field is open. Yes. Please.
To say that Sanchita Karma plus Prarabdha Karma plus Agama Karma, if it is equal to zero, you will get Nirvana.
It's true. But then if it is zero, then you won't have this life. The very fact we have this embodiment shows Sanchita Prarabdha Karmas have started working out. Agama Karmas are karmas that are yet to be fulfilled. I mean, if we continue based on what we are doing in this life. So, in fact, when all the karmas are exhausted, according to Buddhism, for example, when all the karmas are exhausted, Trishna will be extinguished. So you will be completely free from this chakra, this cycle of rebirth, and Nirvana will be instant. So, according to Vedanta, there is an interesting discussion in Shankaracharya's commentary on the Chandogya Upanishad. What does a person do when he reaches the highest spiritual realization? It's called Jivan Mukti. You already liberated, but you are still very much alive. You may be working, you may have different responsibilities. So a person who has become a Jivan Mukta through spiritual practices, liberated, he need not die. He may continue living, but whatever he does will not produce any vritti or any karma phala. It will not produce any result. Because what a spiritually enlightened person, liberated person does will be automatically unselfish action, disinterested action. Only those karmas that we do with full awareness that we are doing it, and we are doing it for a definite purpose. It's called kartrutva, bhoktrutva, buddhi. Means the awareness, the feeling that I am doing this work. So I am the doer. And I am doing this work for a definite purpose. So these two strong convictions, ideas, will link us to that action. That means the doership and the enjoyership, so to speak. I am doing this. And I am the one who is going to enjoy the results of this action. So long as we do anything with this conviction, we cannot get out of the consequences. We are linked to its result. A liberated soul who has completely worked out all his karmas may continue living, doing good for others, but his actions will never be selfish actions. He will be doing his work as part of his physical embodied being. He may eat food. He may do the work. You know that Vyadha, the story of Vyadha in the Mahabharata, was a butcher actually. He was a liberated soul. and he is teaching great philosophy to a saint. The Mahabharata is a long dialogue, we already referred to earlier. He was a liberated man. He has reached Nirvana. But every day he used to cut animals and distribute meat to satisfy his customers. That was his profession. But while doing it, he was totally detached. So you can such questions are fine. So karma, I mean, when all the karmas are exhausted, it need not mean the end of this life. It could only mean the end of cyclic existence, rebirth and such processes.
So Swami, presuming what we have, I have many, many past lives, then I have many, many karmas. It does not sound like it is possible to exhaust these karmas, because all these categories of karmas that you keep accumulating, every life you keep accumulating. So this, I mean, it is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. That
yeah, that's a very important question. You know, the reason why it's important is, it is not physically possible for anyone to exhaust every karma piece by piece. So, there are two open paths to exhaust karma. One, to surrender, either surrender to the will of God, developing higher devotion, or what do you call the realization that we are the Atman, we are not the dual, we are not jivas, we are not disembodied beings with body, mind, and intellect, all this, we are not this embodied entity. We are the all-pervading Atman, which is not subjected to the cyclic, the laws of cyclicism. So once we realize this as an experience, then immediately we are liberated. Or when we surrender completely to God. We discussed in Girishchandra Goswami's. For him, it was a moment, it was enough for him. So Sri Ramakrishna himself explains this. See, the room may be pitch dark, but you just bring one light, the darkness doesn't disappear piece by piece, little by little. You switch on the light, darkness is gone all quickly. So all karmas get worked out through either highest devotion or through realization to the path of knowledge, Advaitic realization.
So the karmas apply only when I identify with the body.
Exactly. No, in fact, when we do not identify ourselves as the doer of this action, and also as the one who is going to enjoy the results of this action, then we won't be doing anything wrong. We won't do anything anything very bad in a very unselfish way. That is why, you know, selfishness is sin. Swami Vivekananda, selfishness is equated to sin by Vivekananda. So the point is, the moment we get separated from this doership elements, an important aspect of what we, you know, our actions, it has been all actions, and also the enjoyership. I'm going to enjoy or suffer the results of these actions, and I'm the one who is doing this action. Once this identification is gone, then we are liberated. Slowly, by reducing this identification through contemplation, thinking, that also we slowly reduce this identification. That's it. So we have, yes, almost. If there is any more question, one more question. Next week we have, yes, next week we have. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tosa Suram Vishnu Pramastha.